My name is Deshaun Quinn, and this is the Finance and Governance Committee for April 24th. The chair will be here shortly. She asked me to start the meeting. Also joined by Councilmember Fogarty. And we'll go on to business agenda item one.
Me. Thank you. Okay, thank you. So this is the February General Fund Expenditure Report. And as I read through the report, I just wanted to comment that I'm going to read through the narrative, but as I speak from the narrative, I'm actually, you go to page two, I'm speaking to the highlighted items on page two. So as I read it, that's kind of the pictorial. So here we go. So at the end of February, all departments were within their allocated budget, with the exception of fire. However, no cause for alarm this time. The overage is attributed to a quarterly Puget Sound Regional Fire Authority payment that was anticipated and budgeted to be paid in March. However, the invoice was received in February, and so subsequently we paid it in February, but that's what makes it look like it's over the allocated budget amount. So moving to the right, the percent expended. This column is kind of a high-level barometer that the allocated budget to actual really took this place. However, I like to keep an eye on this column and understand anything that spikes up. So in this case, you know, I looked at anything that was higher or greater than the percent to year, which is 16.7% at the end of February. And so there were two departments. Finance came in at 22%, and this was attributed to an annual payment for the WCIA liability insurance premium, and fire is higher than 16.7% at 26.9%. And this was due to what we just talked about, an early quarterly payment for the PSRFA contract. So again, moving to the right, where we talked about dollar change and percent of change. In this column, I look to identify or understand any changes that are greater than 5% and $50,000 at the department level. And so there are several departments here that you see are highlighted. In the narrative below, for each department, you'll see I've included a table that speaks to the changes. And so I've identified the major classification increases for the applicable departments, and those are listed throughout the report, page 2, 3, 4 as you go through it. So I don't tie out 100% of the change, because the changes that are highlighted in the table, that is a combination of overages compared to last year, as well as there's some departments that are some line items that are under. So the net is this. But what I try and do is identify the big expense changes, and we do tie up the majority of the percentages there. General fund by category. So that is moving into page 6. And on this one, again, we look towards the changes compared to last year, percent expended. And so I concentrate on any changes that are greater than 5% and 50,000. So within this, within the classification here, there's only, the only category is the services category. And within services, there are three categories that exceed that 5% and 50,000. So professional services, this again was the fire early payment. Within the professional development classification, it's memberships and registrations that caused the increase. And thinking back to last year, you know, the year before, what changes that is with the pandemic, you know, there were not a lot of travel, conferences were shut down. So this is twofold. Now that they're open, there's one, and there's more participation. And also too, you know, when we were kind of scrubbing the budget last year, those were one of the first things to go. So this is a restoration of services. So while it seems higher, it is higher than last year, but it is more in line with just a normal budget. And then utilities is the third, and that is directly related to the new fleet facilities building that has opened up. And with that, that's in the report. We'll take questions.
Councilmember Holder. I have no question. Councilmember Flynn.
I don't have any questions. I just appreciate the highlights. That's what we've now been trained to support is those areas that are kind of out of balance with pre-existing and having that average.
My question is, how do you feel about where we are, given the information we have so far this year?
I feel good. It's easy to say that, though, because this is only February. Too much into it, I'd like to think we're doing pretty good. I'm able to look ahead for a couple months, and I think we are, I think we have a history of being very cautious with the budget, and the departments generally are very fiscally responsible, and I don't see that changing now, so I feel good. We'll have fourth quarter coming out soon, maybe in a month, and then we just roll into first quarter, so we start to get more current information, but as of February, looking ahead to March, we are fiscally responsible.
Okay. And our allocations across the year, they're not flatlined. They are when we get revenues and when we're expecting expenditures.
Exactly.
So is that going well based on what we're looking at here?
Yeah. So we can look at the allocated budget, and you see every department is within budget. And so two things there. One, the departments took the responsibility to allocate their budget. So they would look at their budget and identify like insurance payments, and we would budget that when they came in. I don't want to say it's funny, not funny, haha, but interesting that we missed fire, but that's because we paid it early. That was a quarterly payment, but we receive it early, and we're processing vouchers every week now. Mm-hmm. And so they just get caught up and paid right away. So that's one example. Also, as they get grant revenues and paid grants, usually those are paid quarterly, so we put those costs quarterly. So the short answer is yes. They are adhering to the budget as the allocations, and we can see that through their budget that they actually took that exercise seriously.
And then historically, it could be Vicky or the answers. We've had areas where we've run over, had to do amendments. Do you consider some kind of an earmark or something that you watch for, flags that you're watching?
Yes.
Closer?
So one thing that we're doing different this year, because we have the reporting capability, is we are meeting with departments talking about their budgets. So a couple of purposes of that is to, one, identify any errors, there may be coding errors, to identify any unusual payments that they see coming that we did not budget for, and talk about, could this be a potential budget amendment? We'd like to look at how the department does as a whole and see, do we need an amendment for the department, or are they coming in under budget elsewhere in those divisions and they won't need an amendment? So the idea is to identify trends and understand potential budget amendments well in advance. We would keep an eye on it, and then we would bring that to council's attention. We would also probably list potential budget amendments and bring them to talk about beforehand, and then just have an ongoing list. So when we get towards the end of the year, nothing will be a surprise. We will have talked to it three or four times. The good news, as of the end of February, no one is needing a budget amendment at this time.
And judging from what you're saying, I'm going to make an inference, and so I'm going to ask as a question, though. From what I hear, it sounds like maybe the departments have a better handle on their budgets than they ever have before. Is that true?
I want to say yes, but I'd like to say they have more information on their budgets than they've had before. And as a result of that, they now have better decision-making and a handle on it. So yes to your question.
Okay, and I'm looking at both of you, Vicky's way over the corner off camera. But you're busy trying to make this new system work for you, the finance system. Are we there yet?
We are not there yet. We still have a lot of implementing to go. This is the unfortunate part about taking on such a huge project without having additional staff, and we're doing it in our spare time. We would love to roll this out faster, but we just don't have capacity. So we're probably 25% there. Mm-hmm. We are implementing payroll right now, just kind of as an FYI. We've gotten to the point where we're doing parallel testing. So we're still hoping to go live with payroll July 1st. We'll see if we hit that date. There's a lot of work that has to go between now and then to get there. And then once payroll's implemented, the last really big module to implement is utility billing. And just given everything that we're working on, we probably will not start that until next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, of course, continuing to work on the report writing, which is huge for us.
Okay. I would consider that a pretty good beachhead. What you're trying for in July, and if it was even in August. So, well done. Okay. I have no more questions. The other panelists, nothing? Okay. So we'll go ahead to the next item, which is business agenda 1B. Financial considerations regarding the annexation into the Puget Sound Regional Fire Authority. David's going to speak. This is about forwarding this information over to the May 8th COW meeting. But one thing I wanted to say, David talked to me right after one meeting, asking for more deep dive on what's going on the city side, et cetera. And he you know, a lot of things were rushing around, and he deferred from the immediate finance meeting so that he had more time to get information. I see, you know, people, a couple of wingmen here to help out with the conversation. And I feel like the conversation will be a little more developed at this point, and that's why we put it into this meeting. So go ahead.
Thank you, council members. Starting on page 7 of your packet is the memo that came last time to this committee March 27th, and then it went to a committee of the whole on April 3rd. And there was some additional requests for information. So I just want to go through, there's three main requests for information, and there's two attachments. So I'll talk about that, and then I'll come through the attachments. If you go to page 9, the first thing was in the previous memo, we gave one example of a property, and with all the caveats that we all talked about, and I'll introduce my guest here as well, is we're making a lot of assumptions of what a future council may do. I just want to start there. These are a lot of assumptions, and so the last thing we'll talk about is what considerations that future council will do. We just had a conversation about your current adopted budget, your biennial budget, which is balanced for 23 and 24. There's nothing that's asked of the council right now, but the question has come as what is on the docket in 2025 in front of the council. And so being full transparent, we wanted to give you more tables of information. And so this larger table, which is an attachment, goes through commercial, apartments, and several more residential homes. This makes assumptions, we'll talk about that, but I'll come back to this table. The second part was there was a long conversation about what current exemptions already apply for seniors and people with disabilities. We did work with the King County Assessor's Office and found out 211 residents already have those exemptions. And the second thing is that those exemptions have just been increased. The thresholds just went over $70,000 for income levels. And so we would expect that number of residents who are on those exemptions or reduction in property taxes would also be impacted. So that's good news. And there's an attachment there if you want to read on your own more about the exemptions. And it would be great, anyone who can provide this, we can provide as well to our community members, so people do take advantage of this. I think this is a great resource and support system for our residents.
So first clarifying question, it talks about 58,423 in the sample, so it's older than the recent.
That is correct. Yep. It has not been updated from the new, because the state created it, the new threshold in King County is $72,000.
Great.
So that's great. That's great. That hasn't been increased over time, which is well deserved. And the last one on page top of page 9 and bottom of page 10 are these are the considerations that staff had kind of come up with, but I've also heard the council members, you talk about some of these considerations. This is really where I wanted to focus the attention because these are all future discussions and wanted to make sure we understand that. The key thing is that the 23-24 budget is balanced. You already made some, lots of community input. You did a community scorecard. You did lots of pop-ups. Actually, Mr. Colleton was out there doing these pop-ups, did a lot of the community engagement during your budget to receive input on the community from the community back in the fall and even summer of 2022 for that balanced 23-24 budget. So the question will be is as you move into the 25-26 budget process, what kind of considerations? And so we kind of came up with four things. The first one is something we've talked about was also in your adopted budget was you probably are going to take some recommendations from a long-term fiscal sustainability effort. This is a task force. Ms. Carlson has already started writing that RFQ process. They'll probably go out, and then we expect to start that up in third quarter in the summer, and that will be done by in time for the budget process that will begin in 2024. Again, the second part is that community engagement. Mr. Colton was leading that community engagement along with Nyesha Fort Brooks and other staff back in the last budget process, and we expect to do a similar type of engagement process going forward. The third part is the outcome of the August 1st, 2023 election does matter for this service level. This was a bridge budget, assuming we would use one-time funds to make up some of those service and revenue demands. And so going forward in 25, 26, the council will have different decisions to make. And then the last thing is really something that you do all the time, is weighing service levels with the revenues, with the community's input. And so the question is really going to be, as you look to, if you reduce revenues, those often will come with reduced service levels. And depending on the percentage reductions, that could eliminate full lines of service that we provide to our community. Last time we went to the community in that scorecard, most of the residents appreciated the city services and recommended continuing those service levels that we had. So those were the three main things, was really this table, the senior exemption, those considerations. If you would like, I was going to walk through this table. There's a lot of information here. I did want to introduce our guests. They helped us put this together and kind of walk through what some assumptions are here. And so I was going to take time to do that. If you'd like, if there's some questions you would like, we can take a break and come back to that.
Go ahead and walk through it.
Okay. So I do want to introduce Chief Brian Carson and Deputy Chief Sean Planwell. They both were instrumental in putting this together, along with Ms. Bianchi and Ms. Carlson, who are also here. There's a lot of assumptions that go into this, so that always concerns me, because in the end, it's the council's decision. And so we've made assumptions, and trying to put this on the same fair base, we use the same assumptions that were in the previous memo looking at that resident. So we use the same assumptions. We didn't change anything. And so let me just walk through what those assumptions are. The assumptions are that in previous conversations, the council has agreed that it would lower its property tax. And the second thing is that the council agreed that it wanted to maintain its service levels. And that's what's in the current 25-26 financial plan. And so based on those assumptions, we walk through what if those assumptions happen in 2023, what would that look like? Again, all of this is going to be a council decision for 2025. So let's go to the bottom of the page, that McMicken House 2. Let's just walk through that one. That's a $575,000 assessed value home at 2,600 square foot. And now this first part is the FBC, the fire. There are no discounts for that house because there's no sprinklers probably in that house. This is why it's very specific. The levy rate right now at the RFA is 86 cents per thousand. So that house would pay $497. The FBC, based on that type of house, size, and the different discounts, would be $293. So for fire service, that house would be paying $790 directly to the RFA, assuming this is using 2023 numbers, but this is assuming 2025. That would be the first year that these numbers would be implemented. So that's the $790 is the key number there for fire services. Then the second part is, what is the city current levy rate, which is about $245 per thousand. That includes the voter approved. And so that house is currently paying $1,410 for all the city services and a property tax that it pays for property tax. That reduction in property tax that we assumed in that last table would reduce their property tax down to $934 for the city, and that would include the voter approved funds. So if you take that $934 plus the $790, the total bill for that house is $1,725, which is about $315 per year, just under that, about $29, $28 per month. That kind of in that same ballpark that we gave you before. I think it was $32 per month that we gave in that other example. So that's kind of, you can go through all the different houses. You can see that each house is different based on its assessed valuation, but more for the FBC is the square footage of the house. Larger square footage have a larger FBC. The two things that we've added here, besides just additional parcels, and we did it by area, which area in the community they are in. I do have some updates here, but we talked about commercial properties, hotels and fast foods, auto-oriented businesses, and so you can kind of look at there. And then we took five different apartment buildings and what that impact would be and doing that same math. And so you can see what the difference is at the end. Now, this is, again, the council will make those final decisions. This is a council decision. In usually you adopt a budget in November of 2024. And so that's a year and a half away that you would be making those decisions. So we wanted to be fully transparent, and that's what we're doing. Any questions?
Councilmember Spencer, go ahead and do it.
You know, this is fairly straightforward, but I don't have any questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Hogarty.
I don't have questions either, but I do have some comments that would go along with next steps, and you were interested in what you're going to say and then talk about that. Well, just so I can maybe tag team. I like to tag team. So
the next steps are to, after this, to take it over to COW and have a conversation, because there's four other voices that have different opinions, and mine's a shade different than possibly what you guys think. And some were pretty pronounced about what they thought was right and what was not right. The future and what people will be paid.
Okay, so
what do we say to the public between now and when the vote, if they choose to annex the vote?
Yes to all of that. Mm-hmm. So recommendation from staff is information only. It does not say bring to COW. So I think that's something that we need to talk about as a...
It says forward to COW alone.
Oh, why? I'm reading right here, recommendation.
Yeah, so in the end, the council, you make that decision. Is that in the memo, we said kind of this is just discussion, because there's no action being asked.
Right.
And so the question is, how did you want to, this is additional information. It can be here. You can share that with the council, because it's just an expanded spreadsheet.
So is the recommendation wrong in the memo?
I'll leave that to the council. You can choose which you prefer. It's the council's agenda, how you would like to proceed.
Okay. So, that is where my discussion starts, is right there. Mm-hmm. So, thank you. I looked through this because I, obviously, you know, I've been through this over and over again. And I've been, when I was looking at it, I was trying to find out how this would be the most easy, the most clear way to explain this to the public. That was my lens. Because on Tuesday of last week, I had two people call me, and I spent 90 minutes walking them through this with lots and lots of questions. Mm-hmm. And so since I had that conversation, that helped me to come back here and see where some of those questions are and where some of the tripping up points are. So the existing memo that we saw before, you can see I used a pink pen. A lot of it was just clarity of language. I won't go through that, but it's like instead of putting it in this government speak that I'm so locked into now, it's like, how do we say it more in neighborhood people terms?
Understandable terms.
Yeah.
Language.
Yeah, well, I'll give an example because, you know, if we get this, we're just like this. But then I thought, when I would say that, they'd ask questions. This is an easy one. The committee also understood that the annexation would also provide the city a tool to address structural funding gaps annexation. And then it went on, and it's like, what do they mean by tool? What do they mean by structural funding gaps? What's that? You know, so I just started looking at that and said, okay, how do we make this a little more friendly to somebody who doesn't travel in our world? Not changing anything, just rewording it. So so you'll see that. And we can talk about this offline or whatever. Oh, here's a good one. RFA total taxpayer experience. What is a taxpayer experience? I mean, how much are they going to pay? RFA total taxpayer amount would be the words to use. So I just want you to know that I've done that. I'm happy to talk to staff and everybody about that, but I don't think we need to go through that during the meeting. So, but I do think that there are we need to find a way to walk through this, not only for our residents, but for our council members, because I think there's still some education that can be done so that every council member gets this. And that's why I'm going to say, send it back to the COW with that in mind. So, and I can give some more examples. I'm not going to do that right now. But I did want to say that based on, again, on a conversation, which was really good, the same one. I only had one conversation next week. I'm talking about the same conversation the whole time. Considerations the next council will need to work through include, and then we've got recommendations for the long-term fiscal sustainability effort. I think we should use a different word because it's like, so what's an effort, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that type of stuff, we can work through that. Community input and engagement, so another round, right? Which I think is really important, but another round, maybe just like we did before. So, and you might want to say another round of engagement.
Yeah.
What the outcome is of that election, obviously. But the third one, the fourth one was the one where I want to go through this one. Wane service levels with revenues. Should the 2024 council choose to reduce revenues, it will result in reduced service levels, which would likely include a reduction of staffing in many departments, included contracting services and elimination of current services to the community. Maybe we could make that a little bit more reader friendly, but I think one thing that we need to tell the public is that it was mentioned in our last meeting that, well, so what if we vote no on this fire service? We're just going to get everything that we had before anyway. And that is not true. We may have to reduce the amount of our contract. And we've talked about reasons. That's another reason that that I don't think is out there. It's like, if we go to the fire service, you'll get these particular, this will happen, which I'm going to expand on again in just a minute. But if we don't annex, we will be a contracted city, which means that if we run out of money, we might have to reduce the service levels in our contract. Can we do that?
That would be a conversation for the attorney, because the contract does not speak to amended service levels.
Right. But it's well, and I mean, like in the future, I don't mean like next year. Like in the future, we can say, well, we're not going to provide this service because we don't have the income to pay the RFA that, right? Because we're a contractor, it's just not there, so we got to make cuts. That's something that people need to understand. It's not like, well, whether I vote, now that they're, now that we're on contract, we got it. We don't, we got this. Let the city figure it out. Well, the city might have to figure it out by reducing service levels. So I don't know if that goes in that bullet, but that's an important thing that I would like to talk about in the full COW. And what was my last one? I was going back to, now I forgot what it was. But then I have some other things like, when we say our six-year budget, I have some ideas about how to reword things so that it sounds more like, what they understand, like, our six-year budget projection. In order to project our budget out 6 years, this is something we need to do. In order to make our balance out for 6 years, we decided that we would go with the amount. We would assume that we were retaining taxes, so people understand that, because that was another place I saw people getting stuck. And we have to make that assumption. And really clearly, in the end, it will be the council will decide. And that has been said. I didn't see it exactly like that. Just this really, it's crystal clear as we can get our language so that people know. And I think we can practice on our full council on that to see how that works. And then when I think of that last point, I'll raise my hand again after we go around. So there you go.
Sounds fun. Cool.
Or go around.
I think I already went.
Okay. I got a couple of things. One, what we're really looking for is understanding the city half of this. So I guess my first question is, we brought the chief and another deputy chief in to have a conversation with us, but I don't know if they're here just for this chart that's sitting right here, or?
They helped create the chart, and so I asked them to be here because the FBC actually is, this is a simplified version of the actual math behind the full FBC. So I wanted to just kind of recognize their work. And this took a lot of work because they had to go to, we had to go choose individual parcels and how they do the FBC and the levy. Those two things will change each year, just like your budget changes each year. So that's why we chose to, let's focus on actual numbers that are being in 2023, and then you can kind of rough order magnitude assumptions going forward. That's why we have these two gentlemen here.
So I'm going to ask them a couple of questions, not so much for me, but just to get it on the record. What exactly is the property tax amount, and what, how much can you raise it by each, I guess, year? Or time? And what exactly is the FBC about, and what is its purpose, and what is the governance over when you can raise that?
All right.
Spray in your wheelhouse.
Okay. I'll take it, Chief. So we're beholden to the same statutes that everyone else for property tax. Our property tax is capped at a dollar instead of a $1.50, which most fire districts can do because we have the FBC. So we get the same levy limit worksheet that the city gets, and typically are based on our levy right now. Our levy is it increases by CPI, and that's until we get our lid lift. I think it expires in 25. Then we have to go out for a new one, like everybody else has to do. But that's what it is currently. So we get the same levy limit worksheet that tells us what the governance board can't do anything other than say we want to request our, you know, what our statutory limit is what it is. You could say we want to take $1 billion in property tax this year. And they'll say, that's nice. Your levy limit worksheet says you get $24 million, and that's what you get. So they request the statutory maximum, which is what we're allowed to take. This year was the 86 cents on a dollar, and I don't know what it'll be next year. It depends on what property values do and assessed value does. And then, well, next year, the city of Tuckwillow would necessarily be annexed in, but that would change the ADVs too. And change what our dollar per thousand would be. And the FBC is set every year by the governance board in open public meetings. They set the total amount. So they go through the budgeting process. The county hasn't finalized that number. We have a very good idea of what the levy is going to be. And the FBC is the gap that fills the rest of the budget. So that number changes every year, and it's based on what the governance board wants to do with it to make sure that we have a balanced budget. So they can look at the total budget that the chief gives to the board and say, no, it's too much, we want you to cut that. Or they say, we'll fund that with the FBC. They make those budgeting decisions on the whole. And then the group that I was leading before, now Norm Golden's doing that, but they use the formula to apportion that out every year. So in essence, the FBC, so the last 2 years, the FBC has held the same because our levy, because of increases in property taxes and everything else, the levy has held so that we don't need to change our FBC. The FBC is, I'll steal your term, I love it, it's a shock absorber. And that keeps our level of service the same, is what happens in a lot of fire districts, is as they lose levy capacity every year, they lose the cost of doing business goes up more than they can in property tax. And that's when you get a circumstance like in Maple Valley, where that's why they contracted with us, because now it was, we can't afford to run the fire department, so now we're going to close fire stations. But we have no choice other than to do that. And it's just a math problem in the instability. With the governance board deciding where they want to set the FBC, the level of service will stay consistent. If they want to increase level of service, build more fire stations, put more staffing in, then the FBC can be that buffer to help create that level of service.
Is there a limit to the FBC?
It can, yes. It can only be 60% of your operating budget.
Okay. Thanks. And I had heard shock absorber too, and I really like that term. It's easy for people to understand.
Yeah, I think.
And I try to give them economic times, but I'm going to just apply one example on you. We went through a lot of inflation But you didn't raise your FPC.
We did not.
So what happened to your budget? Things costed more.
But our levy, because our levy went up by CPI, our levy held. It gave us what we needed to keep a fully funded budget, and we could keep the FPC flat.
Did you have to levy every time to get the CPI, or did you have one levy and now you follow the CPI?
Our lid lift, when we did it in, I think it was 2018 or 2019, that was the proposition that went to the voters, was CPI every year.
Okay.
So when we lift the lid again, if we want to maintain that, we would have to, again, send our proposition to the CPI.
Gotcha.
And it would have to pass. Otherwise, we'd go back to the 1%.
It could be up to 4%. The CPI.
The CPI was 9%.
9%.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it can go up and down.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So this is geared to succeed with your budgets, which is fine. Mm-hmm. The governance is everything that you've explained, so that's fine. What I would say from looking at the numbers, the ones that I've seen over and over again, I guess you should probably. You had a victory when I was attending the meeting, the board meeting, which was King County, you're no longer working with them. What was that victory so people understand it?
So they were essentially our bank, and we are now the first fire department in the state, as I understand it, to be our own bank. In simple layman's terms, we hold on to our own money. So the interest and the investments realized by controlling our own funds has been significant.
So you have your own, like a city does with their money.
Mm-hmm. To me, that's a really big statement about the responsibility and how well you've run your budgets. I can't remember if you're ahead of time, just on time with that relationship ending.
We were on time.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of credit to our finance director. That was her vision. And they maintained our books in a manner that they knew we could do it, but it was nevertheless a success just because it was the first.
We worked through similar things with our municipal district, and so I appreciate King County, but I also know it's painful to go through another party to get your banking business done, so good that you're there. I'm concerned about false dilemmas, so I'm looking at David now, no longer the fire authority. I'm satisfied with the way the finances out there as well. If you're a taxpayer, and I am one, and so are all the council members, and you're trying to have a conversation with a neighbor, they're looking at this as, geez, we used to put collectively $14 million to the direction, I'm just rounding, to the direction of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to fire authority with this annexation. So I would think if I were a taxpayer and didn't know any other information that the city would stop taxing me $14 million and fire authority would do whatever level of tax, if that matches $14 million or goes up or down by whatever, that would be the clean cut, and I wouldn't be doing anything more.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that we kept emergency management. We know that we kept fire marshals, and we think that's around 1.5, rough terms. I loosely say 2 because it's easier to do the math, but 1.5. So we're left with $12.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And your ask, after we've moved everything over except for those two that we think we're paying taxes for, your first initial ask was, we think it might be to the tune of 6.5, a little over half of what's left over will continue to be taxed.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the services that we have at the city.
Mm-hmm.
But people have trouble rationalizing, if I was paying for fire over here and then I move my money over to fire over there, where did the $6.5 million go? And are we paying money that was coming through the taxes that I was paying that would have been fire department taxes? Are we paying that into other departments? And so, to what level?
Yeah. So the first thing I want to make sure, none of these are my assumptions or these are all council discussions and council decisions. So I just want to ground ourselves in who makes the decisions and who makes the budget. It's the council.
I got the talking point.
I just want to make sure. I can't say that enough because I think it's
question on the board.
I know it's about the
because I was asked.
I think I want to let him respond, and then you can ask.
Oh wait.
I'd rather have him respond to my question. You had a round of asking questions.
I will defer to the chair.
Okay, so just go ahead and answer.
None of these numbers are set in stone. None of these numbers are my beliefs or things like this, is it is the council's direction that you did not want to cut services. What was facing the council in the 23-24 budget is you did not have a balanced budget. You had a $5.5 million deficit going into that budget that would have, we looked at different cuts. And one of those cuts was to, if that would be about a 10% reduction. And the scorecard that was asked would have, you would have had to, if you did a 10% across the board, one of those would to close a fire station. Could have been one of the options, because the current way you're funding current services, and you've talked about the structural deficit, fire does not pay for itself. There is no dedicated revenue that pays that $14 million. That it comes from all the services, property, sales, admission, business, all the general fund resources pay for all the city services. There is no dedicated funding that goes just to fire. It goes to all general fund departments. So I just want to make sure that that's clear, is that you as a council put all the property, sales tax, all these different general fund revenues, and you choose how you allocate it. And this last year, you had a decision to make about you could keep the current service levels, and you chose to do that with one-time funds. And those one-time funds go away. So that $14 million is not sustainable with your current revenues. I want to be clear. That $14 million is not sustainable. You do not have a revenue stream currently, unless you authorize additional revenues to do that, or you'd have to make significant reductions in other general fund resources. In the 23-24 budget, you chose not to do that. You chose to keep the service levels because that is exactly what the community asked you to do, was to keep the current service levels. And so you did that. And so going forward, we assumed, and that was what your budget was predicated on, was to continue that service levels. And so doing that, you would have to find a revenue stream to keep those service levels. But any given time, the council could reduce service levels and reduce revenues. Today, you could reduce revenues and reduce service levels right now. You could amend the budget at any given time. And so I just want to be clear is that all of these are assumptions, and that's why it is hard when you go into the community, is that I think there's been a couple conversations I've heard at the council that there's two decisions. The first decision is to maintain fire services. You have an option here of a funding source, as Deputy Chief Pentwell has just talked about, that is able to maintain service levels that's different than a city. I just heard a levy lid lift voted by the voters that is increasing by CPI. You as a council do not have that. For the FBC, that helps balance the gap, that you do not have that available to you. You have more limits on you than fire district and fire authority does. And that's why that community group authorized and recommended for the long-term city finances to maintain fire services, you should work with the fire authority and be part owners of the fire authority. So that's the main, so I don't think that's true that there's $14 million sitting somewhere. Those are one-time funds that the council allocated to see if the council and the community wanted to maintain services. If the community doesn't want to maintain that services, then you will have a different discussion. You'll have to make reductions in services or find new revenues to keep that service level above, to keep going.
I have more questions than that, Kathy.
So would you restate the question that you just asked for that answer? Because I'm trying to figure out how to frame what I want to say.
So basically, if you're talking to my neighbors, they're saying, what does it cost, my question for years, to run a fire department? And there's a price tag with the fire authority on what it costs.
Right.
We are pulling in taxes that we say take care of not only fire services, but emergency management and the fire marshals, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're retaining 1.5 through our taxes just for that. That's going to be what it costs to keep those guys there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a certain amount of money that's going over to this fire authority that people believe they were paying for fire services. And we were told all the way through three studies, at least two, that it's kind of a wash. That's why we didn't take the fire authority in the beginning, because it was kind of a wash. Let's fix our own. It wasn't a wash where we had to fix our own fire houses. That's where the safety measure came through. And we improved and did our thing and kind of bolstered up. And then at some point we balked, because at 1% a year, it's pretty darn hard for a city to be in a sustainable situation with the fire authority, like all the communities across the United States are finding out, like we've been warned, it's not sustainable. I'll say some of the ones who say going to fire authority also say, fire authority is not sustainable, but they haven't figured out the best model. I mean, if you take politics aside, and don't say you're a socialist, a communist, or whatever else, it frankly ought to be a utility. So just putting it out there.
Okay.
So back to the question. My question is, if you're looking at the $14 million that has to go to fire authority, and that spells fire,
mm-hmm.
right? And you said you kept 1.5, then we're busy taxing over here because they're going to tax over there.
Mm-hmm.
What is it we're trying to sustain, and what were we doing? Were we like shorting our fire department before?
So so there's my comment, because now my question is changing a little bit based on this, is that I believe that we were using the ending fund balance of other departments every year. That's a good question.
So I think that a key thing is in the 23-24 budget, that $14 million was balanced on one-time funds.
No, I'm talking about previous years.
Go ahead.
Are you done? Are you done? I think there's this piece, and I think the chair was getting at it. The cost of fire hasn't really been identified, because every year we're over $500,000, $300,000. So that $14 million is probably $14.5 or $13 or $15 million. It comes from the general fund. And the general fund needs to be spread across all the departments of the general fund. Now, historically, we made a choice to allocate a level of service over the years. However, we're still over every year. So then the approach was, let's do a study, do a report. Here are some things that you can shave off the edges. But that still didn't answer the question, because the cost was significant. Then it was, let's look at some models that seem to work. Still, it was not financially sustainable. And let's just be clear, like, part of the cost is the personnel, right? That's like 75% of the cost is personnel. And so we, this fire department, hasn't grown with population, or the cost, the 1% cap hasn't allowed us to grow with population. Identifying new revenue sources has not allowed us to grow with population. And then fundamentally, we were really scrubbing how you can have a balanced general fund that looks at still preserving services and preserving the service levels of fire. That's just a fundamental math question. Like, this concept that somehow there's this dedicated fund, like, honestly, if you talk to any council member, you talk to any staff person in the city, we know what's in the general fund. And so this concept, you can watch it. You can look over the years how much we were over. There was one chief, there was another chief, and there was another chief. Each time we asked, could we figure the structural piece? The other element is the streamlined sales tax. That would have allowed us to fix the gap. Remember, 9,000 population. 20,100 population with a 1% cap over the top, and the streamlined sales tax taken away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what I'm interested in, and I appreciate the space, is having this factual conversation about actually what exists, because we do have some responsibility, legal responsibilities, and other considerations to talk about the process of budgeting. We learned how hard that was to talk to the public, quite frankly, anybody, about how municipal budgets get funded. Because the assumption was, we're in a flood of money. It's not true. We have a 1% cap. The streamlined sales tax, you used to be able to bridge the gap. That's no longer available. So as we grow, and as the 1% limit, inflation still goes, those costs don't disappear. They hang around, and they carry on to the next year. So when we're talking about the general fund, let's talk about the services across the public. And quite frankly, every year we do a budget, we have to balance what the community says in services and service levels. And then there's just that critical piece around life and safety with police, public works, cleaning up trash, moving homeless encampments, whatever additional thing you add on top, that doesn't ever come, that never comes with revenue. And so that's the whole point about the 1% limit. It's impactful and inflation. But if you want to be fundamental, it's really the personnel that's driving the significant cost. And many jurisdictions, many municipalities are looking at it and we can't sustain it. And they saw that 10 years ago.
Every place around us has been that. And the reason that they have been is financial. They are not trying to say it's this or it's that or the services. We can't pay for it. We just can't pay for it. So it, nobody's trying to hide the fact that the reason is the financial component is really the, I'd say, the major reason.
So great talk. I guess to get back to my questions, it was okay. Yep. Is that we kept asking, what does it cost to run a fire department? We're moving over to fire authority that says it's about, you know, 14 million. So if your taxpayer is going, well, if I'm paying it there, then I should have a decrease by 14 million over here, because they don't understand some of the conversations we're having here.
That's
the problem. But they do say the price of a fire department over here is 14 million, right? So now you look back at us and go, well, it's not really, because we've got 1.5 sitting over here with marshals of emergency. Okay, so it's 12.5 million. Got it. All right. They're saying, not giving my money back, just stop taxing me, because they think that's the price of a fire department. Were you not paying that before? And if the answer is we were not, then what were we paying before? Forget 6 years from now and all that. For once, straight talk, apples and apples, what have we been spending it on? And what service levels are we augmenting into the future? Just so we understand, what is the cost? What's the proportion of that 14 million that we're just right now, apples and apples, needing to pay for? And you're kind of coming up with some that has a 6.5 and looks into the future, and future council members have to do stuff, and they're going, that's a lot of money. That's half. So are you saying half of the money that we put into the general fund that it costs to run a fire department was actually going to other operations? It may well have been. We just, as council members, don't know how to answer that question. So, and that's why we're asking you.
Yeah. So let's work again on this, is that a key fundamental thing is it is a structural deficit that Councilmember Quinn and others have talked about. And I think that is something that people have a hard time understanding, that you are facing structural deficits. Mm-hmm. You balanced your budget, that $14 million on one-time funds. You do not have.
That's the thing.
You do not have $14 million.
I'm sure that we did.
We had about a $5.5 million, and that budget now is going to, that deficit, that one-time fund need, will be higher in 2 years. So we looked at a deficit situation in 22 of 4.5, and so by 2025, that probably will be 6.5.
Oh, but we added a P&O tax.
That was an addition.
That's only not going away. It's going to start from new revenue.
And that was
for things we don't have right now.
I'm just saying. It's a new tax, new revenue.
For additional services. That wasn't included in that original deficit situation.
Okay.
That was capped. I think a way to say it is that was capped this budget. So we know exactly how much it costs. And we said we would enhance services by this budget.
Right. So the choice for the council during the 23-24 budget is you could have not used those one-time funds and you could have reduced services. And ask the public to, if you wanted to maintain or bring back the fire department at that service level, then you could have had this funding. I think that the council heard from the community after all this community input, said we will find one-time funds to pay for that $14 million, one-time funds that are not available to us, one-time funds. And it was several, we used one-time revenues, we made one-time reductions, yeah, made frozen positions across three departments and other things. And
did we those were $5.5 million with one time? I thought yes. It was a three-legged stool.
With one-time funds, reductions in services.
One time.
Right, those are all one time.
Reductions, and what was the third? It's a three-legged stool.
I know, we always do that. It's like,
was there a three-legged stool? Maybe it was just focused with the
B&O tax.
The B&O tax.
That's my point.
Right. For additional, when we went in, there was a big debate about bringing back our fire department, our police department, to full level of services. And so we did ask, and the council did approve and adopt a B&O tax for those additional level of services.
So the B&O tax covered $3 million?
That's the budget in 2024.
Yep, $3 million.
In 2024. So for a deficit that was
looking at $2.5 million.
No, that is not true.
Because we're adding people, we're adding the services.
So the bottom line, I can't say this enough, is you have a structural deficit for continuing your services. That $14 million, there is no dedicated funding. Property tax, we use as a precursor, but there is not $14 million of dedicated property tax that goes to fire department in your city. That is not true.
So to the taxpayer, what that looks like is that since we weren't using all of it for the fire department, in fact, we're doing revenue increases for police departments and other places, does the cost of a fire department really cost $14 million?
For the service levels that you want in this community, which is four stations and having three people in each station, it's about $14 million. It's actually about $14.5 million.
The priority budgeting lesson I got from Governor Gregoire, et cetera, was when you can't afford through prioritizing everything you want. At Christmas morning, where you want that Mercedes-Benz with a shiny new paint job under the tree. You just can't because you're too busy trying to cancel your cable in order to make expenses stretch your dollar. Mm-hmm. We were told sometimes if you don't have enough money, services, we just can't. You can only provide it to whatever you cost, mm-hmm. right? And that's really the question that's happening on the city side, I think, because we said we want to afford the fire department. Here's the model. Mm-hmm. Took a lot of stress off of actual public in terms of the city's, frankly, hobbled way of trying to, keep up with tax inflation and everything else. But we're still back here with a recipe that says absolutely everything we do, that public that we went out to the park four or five times with and talked to them through surveys and had how many respondents?
I think we had a couple hundred responses, actually, because we did the scorecard and then we expanded and did the pop-ups. And so I saw Mr. Colleton at several See You in the Park
events. He did a great job. But when you compare it to 21,000 residents.
I think it's a great response rate, actually, for 21,000 residents.
Pretty good, but it's not statistically significant.
Actually, 350 to 450 is statistically significant
for a survey level. Where I'm headed here is, have we really asked the public what level of service do they want?
Yes.
In the 23-24 budget, I think you did an excellent job of that. And I think you
tried really hard.
And I think in the 25-26 budget, you'll do the same thing. And these questions, and that's why it's really hard, is that this is all assumptions that we're all making a year and a half from now. And so I do want to make us, there's two decisions on this. One is, how do you want to maintain fire services in a sustainable financing? That's what the community group said, is a regional fire authority is the best way to do that.
That's what the public will get to say during this vote.
That's exactly.
Put that on the side. Now it's what we're doing with the city. Can you afford, frankly, to them, an increase?
That would be, that's what the council's discussion, that's exactly in your, that's exactly the council's decision.
And the conversation, I think, is not presenting false dilemmas. You'll have to cut 10%. We don't know that. We don't know that.
That's going to be something the council will have to decide.
Yeah, I just get worried about false dilemmas versus the facts. And the reason you got all the questions from the council four meetings back, was because they'd like a little sharper pencil on answering that question.
But what do you mean by false dilemma? For what?
False dilemma is to say, because if we don't do $6.5 million, we'll have to cut by 10%. That's a hard sell.
This goes back to my...
$6.5 million. I said that wrong. $6.5 million is what we need, not to cut by 10%. And it's like, wow, that doesn't fulfill a logical mind. It just doesn't. Because we'd like to see the details and understand that statement. How do we know? Why is it $3.5 million? Why is it $2.5 million? Why is it $8.5 million? How do we know?
Can I go first about that, or would you like to? Is it right there? Okay. Okay, so that was one of my questions. So what happened was, first of all, I want to say that the council primarily responsibility is the budget. So anything that happened before is on us.
Mm-hmm.
We blessed it.
Mm-hmm.
We looked through it. So this is about us talking to ourselves about that.
This is why we need to know those details.
Yes, I do. I totally agree with that. But in order to do our six-year plan, the staff has to make some sort of projection. And what their projection was in order to fill that, you know, I don't know if it was 14 million, however they did it, they just had to make a projection. So they picked that based on whatever they're doing here. That doesn't mean what's going to happen. We do six-year plans. We have asked the staff to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could ask, like, you know, so maybe what you're asking is where, you know, what
is. We're not the one asking. I'm trying to explain what the council members who were very confused at that last meeting were trying to express.
And okay, that's what we do need
10%,
to
clear. Where will we cut 10%, and what would it be? And what would that then be? If we did 10%, could we run off of no taxes and we just stop taxing 12.5 million? Or will that get us down to we have to still tax at 3.5 million or 2? Or so we see, did we miscalculate? We need 8.5 million.
So I think
do we know the accuracy?
They don't have those numbers, but they can give us categories of things that we might have to cut. I mean,
cost to run a city instead of asking what it costs to run a fire department. Now that we're sans fire department, we are part of the fire department, but we know where that money's going specifically.
So how much in detail do you want them to say?
We got to the one they got to.
That's fair. That's fair.
So I'd like to say, based on the six-year financial plan, which was based on a point in time when we made a decision.
Mm-hmm.
So the first assumption is carry that forward. There's no assumptions made because everyone knows when it comes to the budget, you can't predict what the decision will be.
Mm-hmm.
We can't predict what the decision will be in next year. So you go from zero to this number. This number is actually maybe the least painful based on the information that we know and that the public has experienced.
Which number?
At the current rate.
Okay.
So the reality is, at the point in time when we have the budget, it'll be a different number. It'll be different trade-offs.
Right.
And none of us give up the fiduciary responsibility to do the budget at the time. Case in point, we made a decision to use one-time funds because that's what led us to a balance. This next time, maybe we won't have one-time funds. Either way, this same conversation was had when we had a $5 million deficit. So the cost of fire is back out the number that we paid, not the 14 million, back out the number that we paid in the last year's budget and add 5 and 3 zeros. 500,000.
That's about the
average cost of the amendments, which come at a balance of other services.
That's the key there. It comes. We have to forego other services in order to have this service. And we have been doing that. We have foregone services in order to pay for fire. And what we're hearing, like when Tony went out, is these are the services that people want. And we've had to forego them. That's why they want them, because we don't have them, right, in order to pay them.
Yeah. So it's not just a structural issue with fire. It's a structural issue with the 1% cap and the services, which means you have to have the conversation in general. And this is not related to this conversation, nor really should it be, because any city is going to face these decisions based on our ability to provide a level of service to the community. And we can kind of press staff on what we're paying and all that stuff. That's great. That still doesn't solve your structural problem. And so if you think about the percentages of cuts that we've taken over the quite a few years, but one healthy way to just think about it is no one gives up their fiduciary responsibility. So when the budget comes, we meet as a body and we're all going to do the balance of what decisions need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just do one more reminder. When the beginning of the pandemic, social media was ablaze because potentially Fire Station 52 could be cut. If you look at the numbers, that was a option. The community was pretty loud about not doing that. We, as fiduciary responsible council members, heard the comment, looked at our budget, and made the decision, just like every other one. But the difference is, I can't speak for 2024 council, even when I'm on it, because that decision needs to be made at that time. But what we know is the structural challenges still exist, and the fiduciary responsibility doesn't go away. And the options we will have is cut services or have this proposal, period.
And then on the tail of that, and we'll wrap it up, at least at a court sale, I think, or 10 held to go that long. On the tail of that, we want to possibly do council-matic increases of taxes to build an $83 million probably north of their building. We've never addressed the multi-generational center for teens and seniors. We have to spend money to the tune of $53 million if we ever pick that up again. There's a lot going on turning in this little city of 21,000 that support 150 by day. And some of that, is the two I just spoke of was just a quick example of how their taxes will go up even more if there's the appetite. And the question is, when we showed them the budget, did you say, would you be willing to pay collectively $32 a month, $300 a year, $400 a year, however you want to say it, to keep all those services? If not, then what would you cut? We didn't ask the citizens those questions. They just said, I like fire and I like police and police and parks. Glad the council has to deal with it. And we haven't even talked about capital expenditures and taxes.
We did ask.
We did ask. Remember, we tried to ask, what would you have? Do you remember that? That was part of that online.
Mm-hmm.
It was just it's complicated. So not very many people did that.
No, we asked the question.
But we did ask the question. We asked it. So yes, we had an online tool that would allow you to say, if you want this, you got to cut that, or you got to cut something.
Right. And so I get the 5.5 million argument. I get, oh, we got to hang on to 6.5 to go forward. But you got to have the conversation of them. You're going to get all the same services. Well, what was that? Do they want that building built? Do you want the other building built? That's not part of those taxes. That's more taxes on top of those taxes. Almost within probably a 5-year period, we're saying D20 is not a good financial framework. We're going to do something different. Do you think we're going to go south of the number that we used to have or north of it? Are we going to take less time or longer to spend that? All of those are the factors that people that are sitting next to you going, please explain this to me, are asking. Make it simpler for us to understand. And there's a lot of people, if you say, like right now, if you're talking about the crisis centers, are you willing to pay more to get mental health centers taken care of? Most people are just kind of hunkering down. I just don't want to pay the taxes. I might not care. I think there's some voter fatigue. Actually, I think this thing has a chance. But those are questions people are asking themselves. How bad do we need it? Well, it's pretty bad out there. Maybe we need the crisis centers. Maybe they'll vote for it. I hope they do. But the bottom line is, it's more for them than they had to pay before. In every direction I can think of, we're paying more at the state level, more at the federal level, more at the, the wage levels. We're paying more at the pump. It's all coming down, thank God. And they're just saying, really? We can't go on a diet on any of these services. And I'm thinking, if you did put it out there and say, well, okay, we can save $1 million by doing this, would you want to trade that out? Would they still hang on to it so that it could pay $320, we'll call it $400 a year more? And they might say, time for us to tighten our belt just like we're doing at home. I don't have Netflix anymore, and I cut my cable, and I don't have certain deliveries done anymore because I can't afford it in this economy because my gas prices took me through the ceiling and the cost of eggs cost too much.
We are going to have the public have that opportunity to give that input
after they vote.
I think we're going to have it every year, but it's not just the general public, but those of us that serve. So it's great to throw out scenarios, but the reality is, you know, if you talk about restraint and others, like those are the considerations.
For the B&O, you could say we're going to be able to get a few more officers, right? For the B&O. For the one-time payment we got extras, right? We can start counting just the $5.5 million right away and say where it went to because we got that information that happened. All they're saying on the diet, I'm not like Uber one way or the other right now. I'm just like, give us information. All they're saying on the diet is, where is the 6.5 going to go to? So I can explain it to my neighbor.
Well,
I think that's a reasonable request. They don't know the answer.
It is, and we have to be disciplined about how we share.
We need a lot deeper than that, but we got to explain that.
But there's one more important point that we're leaving out, and that is that if we vote no, then it's not us anymore with the RFA. We're not us. We're contracted, and we don't get to say we do not have three people that can have a representative.
Again, false dilemmas that I don't think my neighbor cares about right now. So that's the thing is that they just want to know, right? Where's the meat? Where do you put the money? And maybe I think that's a great idea and I support it and I'll pay $400 a year more and I'll vote yes. But they're going to ask that question before August.
Yeah. They're going to ask it before August. They're going to ask it after August. They're going to look at us and have a conversation. What do you think about the number? And if you ask me, hey, I'm looking at the number. I'm not happy about, let's say, for example, the number to finish the work.
Yeah. But they ask us the question, we do have to have logical answers of 6.5 million versus 3.5 versus 8.5.
Yeah.
What if he's short?
Yeah.
Okay, so we circled all the way around.
Not me. It's the city.
I keep going on both sides, so you understand. I'm not necessarily.
These are council discussions. Not personal. It's the city finances that the council directs.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And every year has been higher than the previous. If we are fair and honest.
Yes, because prices.
And that is one, what we signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
Two, balancing decisions. That's what we signed up for. Three, the public articulates their concerns, and we hear them, and we make a decision.
Here. One more quickie question. What did Bent do? When they did their segue, did they end up with some kind of goal like we had? And what did they do?
All three cities, Kent, Auburn, and Renton, had similar conversations, as I understand, to what you're having now, and all used some degree of their new taxing authority to maintain other services.
Can we get that one figure? Is what percent?
Yeah,
they kept.
If it's 50, shareable.
50,
yeah.
45%, 75%, 100%. That'd be nice to know. I don't need to know the number of amps, just what percent did they?
Auburn and Kent supposedly kept 100% of their property tax.
Okay.
In other words, they didn't lower their property tax at all.
And they expanded, they used some of those to balance their budget, and they used some of the services to expand services. And the voters approved those.
So are we foolish to not do the same?
Those are things that the council. These are all council discussions.
You're fair in question.
You don't think I made a decision. I'm just trying to get clear answers.
We're good. No, I don't think so.
All right.
We'll stay away.
Thanks, everybody. All right. This meeting is adjourned.